Welcome to Recurring Nightmares, episode 14. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
That's me.
And this month we have two evil kid movies from 1981. These are selected by me. And before we get into it, like 1981 there's certain years and movies that are like known, like notorious or just known for being like great movie years, like 1999 is an example. 1981 is known as like a great year for horror movies. Just looking at like Google here, like Evil Dead, Scanners, Halloween 2, American Werewolf in London, Friday the 13th Part 2, The Funhouse, The Burning, like all sorts of slasher movies. This was like the heyday of slasher movies. Like this was the peak of slasher movies. And amongst them were these two pretty bizarre evil kid movies that we're going to talk about. But before we get into that, we do discuss what we've been watching over the last month. Chris, I know that both you and I have been super busy with movie watching. I saw that you just started going at a crazy clip with the movies you were watching.
Yeah, I was on a pretty good tear for the past month. So
I have maintained my pretty intensive
strong pace.
Almost a movie a day. There's days I take off, but then there's days I'll watch two movies. So we've seen a lot over the last month. We're not going to cover all of it. We're going to kind of give, the ones that stand out. And I'm going to start with you, Chris. And, what were the highlights that you saw over the last month? The ones you want to talk about?
Yeah, so the ones that I picked out here are all they're all 2021 films, all brand new movies. I saw one of them in the theater. I guess we'll kick off with that one. I went and saw Spiral from the Book of Saw. I think that's the official title.
Yes,
it's a terrible name. Chris Rock. Starring vehicle takes place in the Saw universe. And so in preparation for that, I also watched all eight Saw films. It was done kind of on a, I wasn't intending to do it, but a friend of ours kind of like goaded me into it a little bit. So
I pushed you a little bit. I was like, Chris, you did too. Should watch all the Saw movies, even though like I had no intention of doing this myself. I think I watched two of them and I was like, I tapped out. I'm like, I'm good.
Yeah. So I ended up watching them all. I think my opinion shifted on a couple. Mostly, I still like the series. They're mostly bad. Yeah, like I think the first three are probably they're decent horror films, gore films, maybe. I don't know if horror is the right term for it. And then the back half, the back five of that series is a mix of bad, where you're just watching it for the traps at that point. Like the continuity, the overall arcing story of Jigsaw and his apprentices gets so ridiculous that and also you mentioned this as I was watching them, like the guy they get to ultimately replace Jigsaw is just like, he's like a wet noodle. Like,
yeah, no charisma, no replacement for Tobin Bell. Like,
no, who kind of sticks, it's hysterical, he sticks around for like seven of the movies even though he dies in episode three. Like, he always has scenes in them. They're just all flashbacks to like, and they're the best parts of those movies. So watched all that. Opinion mostly stayed the same. Flip-flopped on some of them. I think one of the ones you watched, Seven, the final chapter or whatever. I did not like my last impression of it was I did not like it. I actually came out going, this isn't that bad. Like, it's dumb. It's really, really dumb, but yeah. It's fun. Like,
it starts off with some cool, really cool traps, I thought.
Yeah, like, it gets so ridiculous. Like, to the, I think that's the one that starts off, like, in public.
Yeah, like, and it's like, it's like this love triangle, yeah. And it's the trap is a literal triangle where, you know, two of the lovers have to decide what to do. Yeah, it's...
And then there's another good one with the late Chester Bennington portraying the leader of this, like, neo-Nazi group.
Yes, very good one.
Really good trap.
It's like a Rube Goldberg type thing where, like... Like, wasn't that with the car, and once the car moved, it would, kill all his Nazi skinhead friends or whatever.
The girl is, like, she's pinned underneath the car, so if the car, like, the gets car off goes, the jack
or whatever.
It's gonna go, yeah, if the car gets off the jack, it'll land on top of her. The guy is, like, attached to the bumper, like, one of his friends is attached to the bumper.
He's, like, super glued to his seat.
Yeah, he's super glued to his seat. And then his other friend is, like, up in the front by the garage, like, where the car will, like, speed up and impale him. Like, just a really, it's dumb. It's super dumb, but it's, like, a fun trap to watch unfold.
Yeah. But you have zero sympathy for.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and that's where, like, at that point, it's like you're rooting for the trap, right?
I think that, like, something, again, I did not rewatch all these, but, like, something that I kind of recall from the series going on is the series kind of wants you to root for him a little bit because, like, they always, like, make a point of how awful the people, like, even I watched part two also, and the whole point is, like, the people in part two were, like, bad people who had to learn a lesson. You know, yeah, like it's. I mean, that's kind of like his thing, right? It's like he's teaching people a lesson.
Yeah, and when it lets the traps be the star is when that series, I think, is at its best, because, like, when it's like, oh, we're trying to play this morality tale, it's like nobody cares, right? Like, we just want to see them either die in the trap or escape the trap.
Yeah,
but that's it. So, like. Anyway, it's been a little bit since the last Saw movie, which was Jigsaw, which had nothing to do with Jigsaw is a weird movie in itself, but this is Spiral from the Book of Saw, stars Chris Rock. He wanted to, like, evidently he's a big horror fan and he's a big fan of the series, and he wanted to, like, bring this back, bring the series back. Darren Lynn Bozeman, who directed a couple, I think he directed like 2, 3 and maybe 4.
Yeah.
He's brought back as the director. So this one is kind of like a back to basics type thing, like a Jigsaw copycat. Chris Rock plays a detective. So think if, like, the original Saw just followed Danny Glover and his partner.
Yeah.
Like that. Like, so it's more of, it's almost more of a 7, like, you know.
Yeah.
Saw and 7.
Which is funny, because, like, that's what Saw has always been accused of.
Yeah, it's trying to rip off 7. And in a way, like, it does, but there's also, like, you're playing around more with the killer in Saw than in 7.
Yeah.
And this definitely has, like, that vibe. Like, Chris Rock is the star. It is not...
It's like you're following the cops as they're trying to figure out. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, ultimately it turns out, like, he's been playing a game the entire time because he's, like, the main participant in the game. It is just him trying to solve these crimes where other cops are being put in traps and killed off. And they're all corrupt cops. Saw has, like, this weird flirtation with social commentary.
It's like it wants to, and that's kind of what I heard about Spiral. It's like it wants to say something about cops seemingly, but doesn't really care.
So spoilers here. The premise of it is, like, that, you know, these are bad cops, like, that are being punished, and
except for Chris Rock, right? Like, he's the one good.
Yeah. So, like, yeah. The whole thing behind it is, like, trying to get Chris Rock to help change the police from the inside out, which is, like, you know, it's it's funny that this movie was set to launch last year, and then
the timing would have been crazy.
It would have been nuts because it's a big commentary piece for police departments. Is that like that's the problem? They don't police themselves, so bad cops get away with doing hard fucking shit, and like that's kind of what this is trying to poke at, and it does an okay job. It's still a fucking Saw movie though, so it does it like ham-fistedly. And the other thing is like, I like Chris Rock. I'm a fan of his. He has a particular delivery, though. Like for anything, any movie he's in, it's like very kind of exaggerated and over the top, and he does that here all the fucking time. So it's like, if you don't like Chris Rock, like full on Chris Rock, you're going to be fucking annoyed by this. Cause he is bringing the rock.
Yeah. So like, if you don't like Chris Rock,
it's not going to work for you. I enjoyed it. I don't know. Like for me, it was nice to just get back out to the theater, get the movie experience. Like see movie with other people where they're kind of like horror films are great for this, where people just regardless, they will just openly commentate on the film. Regardless of what the fuck is going on, like they don't care. They will make their commentary, they will say their oh shits or fuck or whatever. And it's just fun to have a movie like where strangers are just like it's a communal feel. So I enjoyed it. Good time. If you don't like Saw or don't like Chris Rock, I would stay away. It is still very much one of those films. So,
I guess three things. One, my first movie back is going to be A Quiet Place Part 2. I don't expect that communal like feel off of it though, because I remember seeing the first one and it was dead silent.
Yeah, very quiet.
Yeah. So, but as for Chris Rock, did you see his season of Fargo?
That he did not.
He's like the main character in that, and he's very not Chris Rock. He's very subdued for most of it. I know the delivery you're talking about with him. Like, there's some instances of that, but he's very he's almost kind of stoic in that.
That's interesting. I should watch. I haven't seen any Fargo, but I should watch that. I enjoy him.
The TV show is kind of neat because you could kind of just pick a season and watch it. It doesn't matter. Like they're all different self-contained things. And I thought his season, the newest one, was pretty good. And I guess the last thing, I have not seen Spiral yet, but I'm going to go very boldly here and say I like the new voice of the killer. And not only do I like it, I prefer it to Tobin Bell's Jigsaw voice. I don't know if you're going to go that far, but I dig the voice of the killer.
I don't hate it. It is like people were evidently like really pissed off.
People do not like it. Yeah.
The reality here is that like all the other previous Saw movies is that like people were, Jigsaw might've been dead, but they're carrying on
recordings.
Carrying on his legacy. Right.
Yeah.
Like, so it's like the cult of Jigsaw or whatever, still pulling that out. Like, this is a complete copycat, taking what Jigsaw did, but adapting it to their own uses. So it makes sense. It's different.
Yeah. And so it's someone who maybe never heard Jigsaw's voice or whatever. Yeah. I honestly prefer that kind of like nerdy lecturing voice to the, like, you want to play a game? Hello, detective. I find that creepier. I find that creepier than the like trying to sound creepy.
Yeah, I mean, I think Tobin Bell has a great voice and a great delivery. But yeah, I could definitely see that. I'll be interested to see how this plays out. It sets it up for a Spiral 2.
You better hope the home video rentals.
Yeah,
pick up and shit.
It did okay in its opening weekend, but like, it's also like it's these movies are front loaded at the box office. I think it's the worst opening Saw movie, maybe since one.
It's in a tough environment, but I just think that, like, I think you're like, this is was a franchise that was trying to be resurrected, and you know, I don't think it hit the numbers it needed to continue.
No, you know,
who knows? But
I hope so, because I would like to, I would like to see where this goes with this Chris Rock character. But yeah, I'm not overly hopeful for that, but we'll see.
What else have you been up to?
Yeah, so I guess the next one is kind of a favorite of both of ours is Alexander Aja.
Yeah.
He released a new movie, Oxygen. It is a singular acted film, and it is all in this like pod type thing.
It's like Melanie Laurent wakes up in a cryogenic chamber.
Yes.
Has no idea how she got there. Doesn't even know who she is.
Yep.
Right. That's kind of the setup.
Yeah. That's pretty much it. She doesn't know where she is. She's not sure what the hell's happening. She tries to get released, and it won't let her out. She somehow makes a call and gets connected to the police. And that's where shit starts to get weird for her, because she thinks she's been kidnapped, and she then starts putting the pieces together. And I thought it started a little bit slow. And it did not necessarily go where I was expecting, but like once it hits like that halfway point, it kind of just ramps up. And for a film that takes place entirely in a fucking pod with a lady laying on her back, it gets really intense, very exciting, and has some very good reveals. So I ended up liking it quite a bit.
Yeah. I think it might be my favorite film of his, and he's like a horror director. You know, if people aren't familiar, like he did like the Hills Have Eyes remake. He did High Tension. That was like his big breakout.
Mm-hmm.
He did Crawl from a couple of years ago. This is like complete pivot to like, this is 100% sci-fi. There's like minor horror elements in this, but this is like a sci-fi film. And I loved it. Like, I'm kind of disappointed to see how little buzz this thing got after it came out. Like, nobody's really talking about it.
Yeah, unfortunately, like it is, it's French language film.
Yeah.
So that immediately puts it like in a bad spot for like, which is just unfortunate because it's a really good fucking movie.
Yeah, it does. Like, if you just hit play on Netflix, it plays a dubbed version. Which is the one I watched. I watched it dubbed, and I know I read some reviews saying, like, you must watch it subtitled because you'll lose some of her performance. First off, she speaks English, so as far as I know, it could have been her doing the English performance as well. I don't know. I'm not like stating one way or the other here.
Right.
But I thought that the dubbed performance was good, and it also was dubbed well. Like, it wasn't distracting where, like, you noticed that like the lip syncing was not matching.
It's like, and it's only has to dub. It only has to like match her
one person
because like anybody else she's talking to, or, you know, there's like a computer voice and, you know, there's people she talks to on a voice channel. Like, you never see them. So,
yeah, I had a friend tell me that the movie Nelson told me that the movie was, predictable and no surprises and this and that. And it's like, I did predict the very first thing you find out. And I guess if you could predict the first thing, like if you really think about it, you could like figure out beyond that. But I just really dig those sci-fi ideas where this goes in the second half. Like, I like, even if it was like, you could have predicted it, like I dig that stuff. So
yeah,
I was just like, and I thought the filmmaking was well, like you said, like it's pretty suspenseful for a movie about a person in a box. You got the ticking time clock going. I enjoyed it a lot too. So, it's one of my favorite movies of the year so far.
Yeah, it's very good.
I don't know if you had anything else to say about it, or if you wanted to touch on some other stuff that you watched.
No, I think it's for Oxygen. The only other one I really want to talk about just came out. I guess it came out the weekend Spiral came out, but it was not playing in my theaters. I would have liked to have seen this one in theaters as well, but then hit Netflix the week after Army of the Dead, Zack Snyder's new film. Zack Snyder returning to these, not the horror genre, but zombies.
Mm-hmm.
This is, wow, this is a Zack Snyder film. I like Zack Snyder. This has, like, it's overlong. It's a 2.5 hour zombie movie. And like the pretense is pretty fucking simple. It's a simple heist job. Like, yeah. And it lasts 2.5 hours. It is also an amazing replication of Aliens.
Yeah, I've seen people say that.
Straight fucking scenes and characters. Like, so at the end of Aliens, there's this great scene where the lieutenant and, I can't think of her name, but the Hispanic tough Marine who has the chain gun.
In Aliens or in
this? In Aliens. In Aliens.
Okay, yeah. Chavez, maybe, or something, yeah.
Something like that. They are being chased by the aliens through this tunnel, and ultimately she, like, you know, her and the Lieutenant Gorman pull a grenade and explode. And he does this, like, there's no lieutenant with her, but he does it with fucking zombies, like, straight down to, like, we're gonna show her as this fucking awesome badass. And then, like, she gives herself up, because I guess she's holding, like, she has, like, a gas tank or something, and, like, and gives the signal to shoot it so that it'll explode. Like, straight up that, there's other pieces, like the ending, even the ending fight, which isn't, you know, it's this big brutish zombie guy fighting against Dave Bautista's main character, and they get to the top, like, he finally, you know, gets away from them, they get to the top of this thing, and the helicopter is gone. it's like just straight up ripped from Aliens. Like, I was like, this is dumb, but it's a lot of fun. I just wish that it was not 2.5 hours long, because it does not need to be.
I didn't mind the length of this movie, and when I initially watched it, I think I gave it 3.5. I think I gave it a higher rating than you on Letterboxd. I gave it like 3.5.
Mm-hmm.
As the days have gone by, I've like thought about it a little bit more, and I'm like, I think part of me had a pretty positive reaction to it, because this is the type of blockbuster filmmaking I wish we saw instead of Marvel movies. So, cool. Like, I'm giving it like a lot of leeway, because it's kind of a mess. Like, I think the movie, like, it's kind of bonkers, like, just crazy. And in fact,
thing with it too is, so, like, the whole premise is they're going into this fucking they're going into like the Bellagio or something to rob the vault, but the real thing is, like, they have this embedded guy, and he is there, his purpose is to get, like, alive.
He wants one Alpha of those zombies. Yeah.
He's basically the fucking Paul Reiser.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, you know, it's kind of it's fitting a mold, you know.
Yeah,
but yeah, there's a lot of direct parallels you could draw from to Aliens. Yeah, but you know, I'll do one specific thing on that drove me fucking nuts when I watched it. So when you first realize that this guy is like a bad guy in the group, mm-hmm. right? Is he tries to cut off one of the group members, like, behind them. He, like, locks the door so she can't get it through, right?
Yep.
And then he's like, well, she's gone. She's fucked. And she comes, like, busting through a window instead, like, she's shooting zombies, like, bam, 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 bam. And then he's like, no, no, don't worry about her. She's gone. She's already gone. She's dead. I'm like, no, she's right there. She's totally fine. You guys could save her. Like, she was not bit or anything, I don't think.
No, not like, at that point, yeah.
And he's like, nope, she's fucked. And I'm like, why did the other characters accept what he's saying? She's right there. You could have saved her. And that's like one of like this is a movie where you really have to like go, I'm going to have fun and accept, because like it's fun movie, but if you like think about anything, it's like, why any of this?
Yeah,
like so there's a part where two characters go outside and I'm like, why are they outside? Like, you guys are robbing the bank right now. Are they just like standing outside to watch, like make sure no zombies come into the casino? But all they end up doing is attracting zombies to the casino. I'm like, what the fuck?
And there's this weird, like, there's this weird B plot with Dave Bautista's daughter Kate, where she goes with them to because, like, I guess somebody like went in into the quarantine zone that she was looking after, so she goes back in to help them. And she does. She finds them. They get on the fucking helicopter. And then I don't think it's ever, like, I think she fucking dies on the helicopter. So this whole thing has been for fucking nothing. The
story is kind of dropped. Yeah.
Like a 25, 30 minute plot line that has no fucking resolution.
Yeah.
The other piece that I liked her, the helicopter pilot played by Tig Notaro.
I liked her a lot,
but she has, like, and this isn't Snyder's fault. This isn't Tig Notaro's fault. The person that they had playing that character was somebody different and was fired from the movie. And totally, Snyder, to his credit, erased this guy from the film. And they had to replace it. But all of her shots are like, it's like, now that I know and you see it, she never has a scene with anybody else in the film. Like, she does, she has scenes, but she's never on camera with another person from the film. Yeah. And it's a little weird. But she's
I think they mask it pretty good. Like, if you didn't know that, you might not. You might not, like, she's great, though. She was one of my favorite things about the movie. But I was not expecting that.
I don't know who she is. But
she's a comedian. I'm not like a huge fan of her, but I was like, I did think one way or another about her, and I was like, this, I like her as this like wise ass pilot. Like I enjoyed her. Yeah.
Like, just from like the intro that you get of her, she's just like, hey, you're going to give me an option for $2 million. My life sucks. Sure. You don't need to know about it. Nope. It's like, no details. I'm assuming it has to do with the helicopter, because I'm the helicopter person.
Lots of like,
like just real, like really good delivery from her, which is even more impressive knowing that she wasn't working off of anybody.
She's talking to a camera.
Fun enough, I guess.
Yeah, like I don't think it's a great movie. I don't think it's as good as Dawn of the Dead that he did.
No.
The
opening is pretty good.
Ultimately, I had okay time. You know what I mean? Like, from a summer blockbuster, you know, it would be great if they were all Jaws and became like classics. But like, sometimes with a summer blockbuster, I'm just happy if I had fun, and I did have fun. So.
Yeah, this was, you know, it was a good, fun time. It was enjoyable watching a movie. Like, you know, you shut your brain off for a little bit and just move on.
Very few horror movies, and this is like rides the line between horror and not, but like, very few horror movies have a budget like this. Like, I don't even think the It movies had this big of a budget. And I will say this, like, last thing on this movie, the fucking zombie tiger has a kill in it that I thought went way further than I expected in terms of how long the kill was and how violent it was. I was like, holy shit.
Just keeps going. It's like,
like, just batting around this person, like, just like lifting them up in his jaws, just slamming them down, and just, I don't want to spoil it for people that haven't seen it, but great kill by the zombie tiger.
Really good. Also, the opening the cause of the zombie apocalypse in this film is fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, you can spoil it if you want. It's the opening of the movie. I don't think.
Yeah, like, so it starts off where it's just like the bride and groom are like they elope, they get married at a chapel, and they're driving down this desert highway outside of Vegas, and she starts giving him a blowjob, and he loses he kind of like loses where he is on the road, runs into a military convoy that's holding one of these alpha zombies, because they were doing experiments on them. That's the reason for the fucking zombie apocalypse is Roadhead. It's great.
I mean, it's kind of a PSA against, being reckless driving. Yep. I'll call it reckless driving. That's
reckless driving. That is accurate. Yep. What did you watch this?
Okay.
This
month? You eliminated a couple of mine that I was going to talk about. I want to start with two things that I want to make sure to talk about because they're two of my favorite things I've seen all year. First is a TV show called Mayor of Easttown. I don't remember if I mentioned it last month. It is the new HBO detective drama starring Kate Winslet. And it's a limited series that's only 7 episodes long. 6 episodes have aired, and this Sunday will be the final episode. So by the time this episode's out, like the whole series will be out, and 7 hours. All right.
Yep. And side note, it takes place like in a fictional town about 40 minutes from here.
Okay. You need to watch this show. I have actually talked to people I know into watching it by telling them it's better than True Detective. And I actually believe that, but whether I believe that or not, I would have told that to them, because sometimes you gotta give people the hard sell these days, because there's so many things out there that, like...
So much. It is something I have on my list to watch.
It's like, especially if you're a TV watcher, it's impossible to keep up. Like, because, TV shows a bigger commitment, right?
Yep.
I had two coworkers I have one coworker and my one buddy who lives on my route. I got to watch the show by saying it's better than True, like it's the new HBO detective show. It's better than True Detective. I told both of them this on the same day, and both of them 3 days later texted me, "I'm all caught up. Thanks for the recommendation." And I'm like, okay, so I guess HBO. You should have called it True Detective Season 4. I'm sorry. Like, apparently True Detective still has some, like, power. But I genuinely do believe I think Season 1 of True Detective is, it's really great, but it also relies heavily on a gimmick, like a couple of gimmicks in it, like the past and present stuff. I think that the mystery in True Detective Season 1 is way less realistic than the mystery in this show. This show is just about a murder, and it's very basic. Like, it's not like there's some huge conspiracy and a yellow king and some church behind everything. Like, this is just like, who murdered this girl? That's what the show is. And it's like this small, I don't know, how familiar you are with Easttown or whatever. And the show, it's kind of depicted as like this smaller working class town, it makes for fun mystery drama in that like everyone knows each other. The show, first off, like the first episode spends a lot of time setting up who the characters are to the point where like a lot of people will watch the first episode and be kind of bored because they're like, okay, where's like the murdering? But like it does a really good job of like you understanding how everyone's lives interact in this town, like how everyone relates to each other, and then you have this like mystery hanging over everything that like is just an excellently plotted mystery. So 6 episodes in, we know who the killer is. At least we think we do, but we're like, still a million questions to be answered in the finale. I don't want to go on too long about it, but Mayor of Easttown, I think, is like genuinely one of the best things all year. And it's one of those shows now where every Sunday night when it airs, I have like, you know, two DMs and two text messages going with friends going, okay, man, like, you know, like going over like the clues, like what's going on here.
Nice.
So it's one of those types of shows. Like if you, simplest thing is like, if you're into the HBO cop drama, check this out. And it's for TV, relatively small commitment. Cause that's it. 7 hours and done.
Yeah. I'm good on 7 hours. So.
Other thing I wanted to make sure not to forget is a film called Riders of Justice. It's a Danish film that just came out starring Mads Mikkelsen. This is on demand, so it's a $7 rental. Riders of Justice, I feel like the buzz is growing for it, and I'm like at the early end of that. At least I hope, because I think this movie is great. The story is Mads Mikkelsen is like this soldier who's deployed, who has to come home after his wife dies in a train accident. And, you know, he has to come home to take care of their daughter. He comes home, this statistician, is that how you say it? Like a, you know, stat guy?
Statistician?
Statistician shows up at his door and says, I was on the train with your wife. I gave her my seat. And your wife was murdered because this train accident was no accident. There's no way. The odds are too high. and this guy has a theory that there was a guy on the train who was going to testify against a biker gang, and the biker gang sabotaged the train, and his wife was just like a casualty of that attack.
Okay.
And Mads Mikkelsen, being the soldier with a particular set of skills, decides to go kill the entire biker gang, and that is Riders of Justice. It is every bit that fun kind of revenge type movie, like something like Taken or something like that, but it has a lot more going on under the hood. Like it has like philosophical things in it about even just like there's like parts where he discusses with her daughter what happens after you die. That's way deeper than you would expect from this type of movie. So like you get all the fun popcorn stuff, like the people fucking shooting each other and all that that you expect from this movie. You get really smart intellectual stuff, and you get really, really funny character stuff where Mads Mikkelsen meets this statistician and becomes friends with him and becomes friends. Like, so it's like the movie walks this line and does this crazy balancing act between like drama and comedy and philosophy. I'm like, I couldn't believe it pulled off as well as it did. Now it's a bit of a hard sell because, like I said, it's a Danish film, so you're going to be reading to watch it, but you'll be having so much fun by the time it gets going, you'll kind of forget the fact that you're reading. And I think it's a great film that will catch on more. I would not be surprised if it gets a remake, but the film that we have is already pretty damn good. So high recommendation for Riders of Justice, even though it is a paid rental at this moment.
Got it.
One or two other things. The Mitchells versus the Machines on Netflix. Have you seen this, Chris?
Have not.
Wow. Okay. I think you'd like this too. I'm sure you've probably heard about it.
Yep.
It's a animated film.
The Lego guys, right?
Lego guy, Lord and Miller.
Yep.
They did not direct this, and watching it, I thought they did, because it feels like one of their movies. They're just the producers on it. I'm okay. Sure they had a strong guiding hand on it. Feels like something they did. If you like the animation in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, you're going to like the animation in this. Great mix of different styles of animation, as well as live action footage. And it's about a family trying to survive in the robot apocalypse. So think Skynet, you know, Okay. Basically an animated Terminator film for, family film. And I put it up there with anything Pixar's done lately. It feels on par and in some ways surpasses what they're doing. I think it's very funny, very heartfelt, very like there's moments between the family members in this that like will really get you, pull at the heartstrings, just like in that Pixar way. So
right.
Another one of my favorite things of the year. It's just one that I don't push as hard on people because I'm like, this is not some subtitled Danish film that's hard to sell to people. This is some big family animated movie that I kind of assumed everyone would see on their own. If you've not seen it, though, Chris, check it out. You'll like it.
All right.
One or two other things real quick. There's a movie called Fried Berry that came to Shudder. It's not a good movie.
Okay, it's on my list.
It's not a good movie, but it is so bizarre and out there and kind of ambitious from this like first-time filmmaker who, guy's name is Ryan Kruger. He doesn't seem like a person I would like just based off of his Twitter. And he's always in promo mode. So, like, if you mention his film, he'll, like your tweet and respond to you. And it's like, dude, settle down a little bit. And his movie, like, basically has no real plot. But, like, there's just scenes that you will see in this movie that will just, like, you'll just be like, what the fuck did I just see? Like, what on earth? It's about a guy who's a heroin addict that gets, his body gets taken over by an alien who's, like, visiting Earth. And the movie that results after that is like just this guy just going around Cape Town in South Africa, just running into a series of adventures. Like I said, not like a hard plot to it. It's just like, what if an alien came to Earth and, you know, let's do some fish out of water, like comedy and craziness. Reminded me a little bit of that movie Starman from John Carpenter.
Okay.
But just fucking nuts. So again, not saying it's a good movie, but I did enjoy Fried Berry. And the last film I will just mention, I don't want to go too long on the intro here, but the last film I will mention, just because thematically it fits with what we're going to talk about tonight, if you want to see a hard-hitting evil kid movie, way harder hitting than when the films we're going to talk about, pretty disturbing, watch Eden Lake. It is free on Tubi. And it's, again, I don't want to go too long here. It's from like 2007 or 2008 and stars Michael Fassbender, who runs into some kids in the woods. It's a brutal film. I think I'll leave it at that. It's a lot of stuff for people to.
Yeah, that's a lot to catch up on. I'm gonna add Eden Lake to my list as well.
Yeah, Eden Lake, dude. It's very good, but it's like rough. Anyways, let's get into our feature presentation here.
Let's get into our
double feature of evil kid films from 1981. First up, we have Bloody Birthday.
1970. Three children were born during a total eclipse of the sun. Now, 10 years later, they share a terrible compulsion to kill, and no one can stop them. If they decide they don't like you, watch out. The children will stop at nothing to get a deadly murder weapon. And anyone can be their victim. No one is safe. Not even their families can escape. Bloody Birthday. Children shouldn't play with sharp objects.
Bloody Birthday, released April 28th, 1981. It had no VHS release until 1986. And Bloody Birthday, as well as our other film tonight, are both kind of like lost films from that era. Kind of like lost. We'll see if we say they're hidden gems, but kind of lost films from that era. So like not a ton of info on either of them. You know, since Arrow Video released it in 2018, I'm sure if you get the Blu-ray, there's some special features that will dive deeper into Bloody Birthday, but. You know, Bloody Birthday, as well as the other film we're going to talk about tonight, The Pit. I don't have a ton of info. I don't have like box office info on any of them because they're movies that like came out. They played the drive-ins and stuff at the time and kind of really disappeared until these kind of boutique like Blu-ray companies started digging up the gems. But like I said, it came out April 28th, 1981. It was directed by Ed Hunt, written by Ed Hunt, and Barry Pearson. Has pretty good ratings on some of the sites, like Rotten Tomatoes, it's at 67%. IMDb, 5.7, and Letterboxd, 2.9. So not terrible reviews.
Not
bad. And the basic premise of Bloody Birthday is that these three babies are born on the same day during a solar eclipse in 1970. And 10 years later, they're homicidal maniacs. That's the story of Bloody Birthday. And it does not waste any time getting to that. It starts with like a scene, like you kind of hear what's going on in the hospital and it says a date. And then it's like, oh, 10 years later, 1980. We kind of enter in on these, like this couple that is having sex in a cemetery, which is not a first in horror, but this is very fucking weird. I think you and I were texting about this because, like,
it's not just in the cemetery, yeah. It's in a fucking open grave.
Well, like, they start, like, they're like making out by a tree or something, aren't they? Like, it's not,
yeah, it doesn't.
It's first, it's semi normal. and I think when they're still making out here, they have this part that I was joking with you about, and my girlfriend has joked about since, where the boyfriend is like, let's play ambulance. And she's like, what's that?
Yeah, that's after they get into the...
They get into the grave? Yeah. Okay. And he's like, you know, you say red light when you want the ambulance to stop, and he starts like pushing his hand up her leg, and she says, red light. And he's like, silly, you know, ambulances don't stop for red lights. Like, what the fuck? It's a thing that would like you would never see in a film nowadays, and that's a lot of these two movies is stuff you would never see nowadays.
Yeah.
But you know, here we get boobs in the first 5 minutes of the film. You have this couple that decide to go have sex inside of an open grave, which is just like, again, I've seen movies where people do stuff in the cemetery. I know that's a thing that like happens. I don't think that couples go inside of the open grave, though. I don't know, man. Have you ever go in any open graves?
No.
To bang when you were a teenager?
No. Like, I mean, like, I get it. Teenagers go and they'll go to some weird fucked up places, right? But like an open grave, like that's a
how you get out.
Bro, I don't know how they got in. Like, I mean, I know how you get in, but like, yeah, like you're 6 feet down. Like, who the fuck is climbing out of there? Like, after they just had sex? Like, no, that's fucking weird. Like,
they get killed right away. They inside the grave, they get killed.
Just amazing too, because like the kill is so funny. Just because like they. If you start thinking about it, they're in this grave. So they're in a hole, and the hole is taller than this guy. Like, yeah. Deeper. But he's getting hit flush in the face with a fucking shovel.
As if the killer's standing right next to him.
Right in front of him, yeah.
Yeah.
So funny. And then she gets strangled with, like...
Jump rope.
A jump rope, yeah. It's like, what? How strong are these fucking kids?
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway...
And then we have a scene with the sheriff of this town. Yes. is in a classroom questioning the kids about the murder, and it's like, okay, like, why would the police go to a classroom of kids,
9-year-olds,
yeah, to discuss a fucking horrifying murder? Because it wasn't like their peers that got killed or anything like that. So, like, I don't know what the clues they could have got from the kids.
Right. Outside of the fact that the sheriff is the dad of the one girl, like, and she's able to, she, like, she says, "Hi, daddy," like, yeah, as you leave. Like, the scene makes no sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I just don't understand. But, of course, when he's talking to this classroom, the killers are there, because these kids,
yeah,
these,
yeah,
demonic fucking hellspawn. We get long scene of so then we get to, like, really meet who these three kids are, who are, like, complete and total psychopaths at the age of 10. And it's this long scene of them paying the girl of among them, who I think her name is Debbie.
Mm-hmm.
They're, like, paying her to look through a peephole in her closet that looks in on her older sister's room as she's changing. Another boob scene. Great boobs.
Gratuitous, too. Like, it's gratuitous, pretty long.
Hell, it's a very long scene of the kids looking at the older sister's boobs. Then we kind of meet, like, our main characters, who, I can't remember the one kid's name. It's like this boy and his older sister. I think her name is, actually, I don't remember her name either. I'm sure I'll get to them in my notes.
Timmy's the boy, right?
Timmy's the boy, and his older sister kind of feels like the main character almost in the movie, because she's the one that starts, like, piecing together that these other kids are evil.
Yep. Debbie? No, Debbie's the evil little girl. Yeah, no, I don't know.
I think Joyce might be
Joyce, yes, because yeah. Beverly is Debbie's sister.
It's crazy how much the names of all these kids, like, stuck with me, because there's kind of a lot of kids in this. But yeah, Joyce, I think her name is. There's a scene of her, like, walking through the neighborhood that felt very reminiscent of Halloween to me.
Yeah,
those early scenes in Halloween where, like, the girls are walking around. Just, like, she even has, like, her books in her hand, exactly like, you know, and this came out, what, 3 years after Halloween, so yep. Definitely feels inspired, but unimportant, because next plot point is little girl Debbie, her dad is the sheriff, she lures her dad outside of the house, and she, like, sets up, like, a skateboard on the steps to, like, try to kill him. That doesn't work. He comes and he starts talking to her, and then her friends, the other two evil kids, just beat him to death with a baseball bat, and they place the dad on the stairs, right, to make it look like he fell.
Yeah, well, so, like, they're still doing something to him, and Timmy sees
these things. Yeah.
What happened? And that's when Debbie starts yelling for her mom, like, mom, dad fell. Like,
yeah.
Like, his head was just bashed, like, multiple times, like, bashed in, like.
I just love how there's, like, no ramp up to these kids becoming evil or anything. Like, right on, like, full on, right away, the sheriff is a problem, the sheriff is their dad, the sheriff is dead. And, yeah, they like, start to, they notice that Timmy, like, noticed, and they start to, like, think that, you know, Timmy is, like, a problem. They lock him in, like, a fridge in a junkyard.
Yeah.
They take the sheriff's gun, so now the one psychopath kid with the glasses, Curtis, has a gun now that he's carrying through the rest of the movie.
Right, and, like, everybody, because he carries around, like, this replica gun as well, or did, and so, like, everybody thinks that he has a replica.
Yeah, he used to have this fake toy gun, basically, like a replica, yeah. He replaces that, and that plays into the plot later. Like, he puts that into the dead sheriff's holster, and he takes the real gun. There's a part where they lure Timmy's older sister, Joyce, to the junkyard.
Yeah.
And this is the one scene in which Steven, like, the one evil kid, Steven, like, the blonde-haired kid with the mop, It's the only time he gets to do anything, but I have to say that this scene is pretty awesome. Like,
it's good, yeah.
It feels like a very good like drive-in movie scene. It's like just cool, like this car just kind of like barreling through this junkyard, chasing Joyce around. Like, and Steven is wearing like this crazy scarecrow getup, kind of like he looks freaky. Like, I thought it was a cool scene.
Yeah, he looks like that. They both, I think, both Steven and Curtis are there in that in the car, and because one of them is with him. I think one of them is pressing down on the gas with their hand.
Okay.
While one of them is driving, but yeah, they're chasing her through like the junkyard, and it's really a fun scene.
It's good.
And it's like, not only are these kids fucking evil, but they're kind of smart too. Like, like they figured out a way to like, yeah. Like, oh, they're gonna, always coming up with evil. Yeah. Like these weird evil plans. Like, oh, and like, how do we get the car? So like, we don't want to be in it when it goes over the cliff.
Yeah.
We want to chase her off the cliff. So how do we do it? All right. So we're going to like rev the engine by, you know, putting a pole here onto the, which is, you know, normal stuff, but also we're going to like rig the gear shift so that like we get out of the car and we pull it into drive and it'll just take off.
Yeah. And actually there's like a scheme later on that we're going to get to that I think is really neat. Like, again, though, I think Steven gets very little to do, and they give most of the stuff to Debbie and Curtis.
Yeah.
I think it's hard for me to choose. I kind of love Curtis because he just seems so gleeful about, like, But Debbie's, like, one of those real, evil little girls. Like, it's just, like, I don't know. It's hard to choose.
Yeah, and it's hard, like, because she's, like, believably... Like you look at her and she's not like smirking in the corner like Curtis is. Like Curtis gets caught doing shit and then like he like hides behind other people that, you know, oh, he's just a kid, leave him alone. But like Debbie just turns on her charm and it's like, yeah. Everybody around her is like, I must be crazy.
I think like she is like the evil ringleader of them.
Yes.
But something about Curtis I really enjoy too. There's an awesome shot with Curtis we'll talk about later, but Curtis actually takes the sheriff's gun and goes and shoots their teacher. And I think it's like the teacher's lounge where they do this, but it's just like,
yep,
fucking crazy. That was actually, I think, before the junkyard scene. We get a scene where Joyce explains to Timmy like astrology, while Curtis is like lurking around outside their house with a gun, trying to like look in and shoot them. But like, this astrology scene is kind of important because it kind of explains why the kids are evil, and it's because they were born on the solar eclipse.
Yeah.
I don't really, you know, I don't believe in this shit, and also, like, whatever, it doesn't matter, but the point is that, like, because they were born on the solar eclipse, they, like, are missing parts of their personality that normal people would have, and they're basically sociopaths. I think while this is happening, Debbie is like at her house aiming the arrow through the peephole at her older sister.
Yes.
Curtis gets distracted and he like goes,
it's like a van pulls up.
Yeah. He sees a couple having sex in a van, which I guess is something that used to happen way more back in the day. I don't know. Like, it seems like it was like a horror movie trope back then. I don't know. I don't see people having sex in vans on my street ever. You know,
how do kids have the money like to buy one? Like, because it's not even just like, you know,
yeah,
like, you know, pick up there. It's always like one of these fucking construction vans or.
Yeah, it's always like, think of how many horror movies too, like have that van, like Friday 13th Part 3, yeah. Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's always the fucking van. At Halloween 1, they're in a van when they pull up to the one house. We get more boobs in the scene. Like, that's one thing I will say about this movie is very of the era in terms of slasher film. And like, you know, you had to have boobs. Like, that was part of the genre. And this movie, like, I think delivers on the boobs almost more than the kills. Yeah, like, a lot of kills in this, but it's like shooting somebody.
Yeah, the kills are like, I mean, there's a couple scenes like that. The first graveyard one, and like there's a couple things that are cool, but for the most part it is just standard, like, yeah. standard deaths.
Someone gets shot. Someone gets hit with a shovel. It's not, you're not getting like the Kevin Bacon arrow through the fucking throat type stuff in this, really.
There's a good arrow shot. Later.
Oh yeah, I guess I kind of wrong there, because that is like one of the few really good kills.
Yeah, but yes, for the most part though, it is like bullets and pushing, and like it's the kills aren't great. So yeah, the boobs, the nudity definitely pulls
somehow
here.
Yeah, somehow it like upstages it. The movie kind of like builds up to this birthday party, which is fucking insane to me. It's for Debbie, the girl, evil girl, and it's like, she literally just killed her dad, and you're still gonna have this big birthday party where the whole neighbor comes over.
Like, oh, we're all like happy to be here. Like, the mom's like, well,
she's crying in the corner. Like, I was actually surprised that they were gonna like comment that on it all, because I was like writing notes right away. I'm like, why are we still having this birthday party? Like, what the fuck? This movie's ignoring that her dad was just killed. And it's like, no, the movie doesn't ignore it, because it acknowledges it when you see the mom crying about the fact that her husband like just died like a week or two before this, you know. But in this birthday party sequence, you get like one of my favorite little schemes that they do, which is Curtis, he's like putting fucking poison in the cake frosting and spreading it on the cakes. At least that's what you think, and that's right, what he wants Joyce to think. She discovers him, and he's like, he has a hand behind his back. She checks behind his back. He's got this ant poison, and she starts like freaking out, like, this kid's don't eat the cake, everybody. This kid's crazy. He's poisoning the cake. And it turns out it was all a scheme by Curtis to make her look crazy, because there's nothing in the cake, and everyone was fine. But it kind of brings like this, you know, conflict between the evil kids and the good kids to a head, because now like the evil kids have decided that, you know, Joyce and her brother Timmy are a problem, you know.
Yes.
But Debbie's older sister Beverly discovers Debbie has this like scrapbook of all her killings, which is fucking great.
I feel like the idea of like she is so vain that like she keeps like a record of
it's a total serial killer.
Yeah,
like it's something like a serial killer. It's like this little 10-year-old girl,
and she's so smart too, because like she confronts her on it, and it's like, what? Well, it's Curtis's. Just throw that motherfucker under the bus.
We get Debbie finally. And Debbie invites Steven and Curtis over, and they decide to take out her older sister or whatever. She points like the arrow through the peephole at her older sister Beverly and lures her to the peephole and shoots her in the eye with the arrow. So you do get a cool arrow kill. Actually, I think Curtis and Steven aren't quite there yet.
They're not there, and they're kind of like a little pissed off.
Yeah, Curtis is like, why didn't you wait for us? We wanted to see you kill your sister. But it's like interesting this part though, because they like the boys like sneak her sister's body out, and the next thing you know, they're like at the sister's funeral, and I'm like, okay, how is the sister's death explained? Like, you know what I mean? It's all of a sudden they're at this funeral. It's like, okay, what the fuck? Like, I just felt like there's a crucial story element missing of.
Yeah, like what is the purpose here? Like, how did Beverly die, and he's taking the fall for it.
Yeah, like, yeah. Just like,
she's obviously been shot through the head. Like, he's arrow.
Like, if theoretically, if you snuck her body out, you could have like dumped the body and no one ever found it, and she would be a missing person. Like, right. You know what I mean?
But they explicitly have a funeral.
Yeah, they just cut to, they're at a funeral, and they've made Debbie's mom so fucking nuts that she like is committing herself to a fucking institution for a while. And also, like, these kids have free reign over over Debbie's house. And they invite Timmy and Joyce over to babysit so they can fucking murder them. And we get the big finale. I think this finale is a lot of fun. But then, like, it also leads into some of my problems with the movie. So yeah, you get the good kids trapped with the bad kids in this house. And just kind of crazy shit going around. Like, you have Debbie popping out of a closet with the fucking jump rope at one point. There's an awesome, awesome fucking shot of Curtis stepping into, like, a living room as Joyce and Timmy scurry away, where, like, the camera is, like, all the way on the other side of the room facing Curtis, and he's, like, shooting the gun at the camera. The camera's kind of moving as the good characters scurry away. The gunshots are coming right at the camera. It's a really cool shot. If anyone has not seen the movie, like, watch the trailer for this movie. It's like the shot is in the trailer. It's, I think, really neat. It's a lot of fun. A lot of, like, cat and mouse and crazy shit that you want from an ending of this type of movie.
Yeah.
But, like, the movie, I think one of my favorite things about Bloody Birthday, like, my favorite thing is it does a good job of really making you hate these little evil shits, because they're so evil and shitty that you can't wait to see them get their comeuppance, and their comeuppance is just not enough, in my opinion, at the end of their
story. It's, yeah, like, basically, Curtis and Steven get captured and locked away, and Debbie escapes, like, and it does have a really good ending where, like, she's obviously continuing her killing spree, but
yeah, that's kind of neat. But also, it's like, Debbie escapes, her mom's driving up as she escapes, and, like, she hops into her car, she's like, "Mom, you know, I think she does say the other two boys did something bad, and they're gonna try to blame me too." And immediately, her mom, no questions asked, is like, "We're running away forever." I'm like, okay, so, like, you, like, fully accept within 10 seconds that your kid is evil, tried to kill some people, and we're going to run away. Like, I was like, okay. Okay, Mom.
I mean, we don't explain her other daughter's death either. So
Yeah.
Just a lot of shit is just glossed over to get us moving.
So, we're, I guess, kind of covers the movie. We'll get into our final thoughts and ratings, but just actually, no, I'll let you go ahead and give me your final thoughts and ratings on this.
I think it was a fun time. Like, it is, for the most part, a typical, serial slasher type film. Yeah. Like, you know who the killers are, and it's just seeing how it's going to play out, like, and who's going to die next, and how our heroes, Timmy and Joyce, are going to survive or not survive. I do think you're right. Like, you know, it doesn't have the rewarding ending that you want, right? Yeah. Like, you want to see these little fuckers get it. Like,
I want them dead.
At least Curtis. Dead. Like, I definitely wanted fucking Curtis to get his, because, man, that kid's an asshole.
His little fucking smug face with his glasses. I wanted him dead so bad.
And we don't get that, and it's a little bit unfortunate. So I think, like, it that deflates it a bit, that some of, like, when we're sitting here actually talking about it, it's like, wow, some of that shit made no sense. Like, like, I didn't even really think about the whole Beverly thing until we were just talking about it. It's like, yeah, there is no explanation for why she's dead at all.
I noticed it, yeah, right away. I was like, how did we go for the funeral? They just hit the body. Why is there a funeral? You know, like, I was just like, what is going on here?
It's like, I don't know, like, parts of it seemed rushed. Parts of it seemed like it's drawn out a little bit too much. But overall, like, I think these kids are evil as fuck. And, like, they portray it well. Well, at least Debbie and Curtis do.
Steven is not given a lot to do.
Right. Not really his fault. It's just he's not given anything to really work with. Or given, you know, you could have just done this film with Debbie and Curtis.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it would have been fine. But they are super evil, and that is fun enough for me. Like, they're evil. I'm enjoying watching them as it goes on.
Rating.
3.
3, okay.
Well, we do 10, right?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No, I gave okay. No, I'm gonna give it a 6. Okay. 6 out of 10. Sorry. I gave my letterbox rating, which is 5.
Yeah, I think that you and I are pretty in sync on this. Like, to me, it's pretty standard slasher. Like, it fits the slasher mold of that era, but you know, I think the drawbacks for me is the kills are not gory and violent enough. That's always a complaint for me. But like, come on, you're in this genre, you're in this era. Like, the kills should have been beefed up a little bit. And the ending is just slightly unsatisfying because you really want to see Curtis and Debbie get fucking killed.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, for this low budget movie, I think they got pretty good performances out of the kids, and that the kids are like, it just does a good job of making you hate these fucking kids. Like, you know, movie to get a response like that out of you, where you're like rooting for something to happen.
Yes.
You're having a good time. So I am actually at the same rating as you.
Nice.
As well, a 6 out of 10 for Bloody Birthday. It is on Tubi currently, which is free, so if you've never seen Bloody Birthday, if you don't watch along with us, this is, I think, our recommendation to check it out.
Yeah, it's fun.
And then up next, we have The Pit. But first, let's do a...
Let's take a quick break.
Not that I don't love my son, Miss O'Reilly, I do. But I've never been able to understand an otherwise normal boy who lives entirely in his own head.
Jamie, what are you doing in here?
I was just watching you sleep.
And we had an incident here with some old lady in the community. Seeing him swinging in the trees out back with nothing on except some Superman cape or something.
He'll grow up.
Surely, my dear, but into what? One of those hippies.
No, he's not crazy.
How old is your boyfriend?
He's not normal. He's distressing.
I think I'm gonna tell her about the things. The secret?
Careful, Jamie, careful.
I know where there's a huge hole in the ground.
Big hole in the ground?
And at the bottom of the hole, down in the dark, there's some things.
Okay. So The Pit was beamed in from another dimension and released on October 23rd, 1981. It was directed by Lou Lehman and written by Ian A. Stewart. Pit is about like a 12-year-old boy who discovers he has like a pit in this forest behind his house, in the woods behind his house, that has trolls living in it, and he starts like killing people like by throwing them into the pit. He also has like a teddy bear that he talks to. He also is a complete fucking creep, like total pervert. I mean, when you're 12 years old, you are a horny little boy. I understand that, but like this movie is completely insane with that aspect of it.
Yeah.
So let's get into it. Like, it starts right off. Like, the movie is really kind of abrupt in how it starts. Like, I don't even know if there's a logo or any opening credits or anything. It's just like it feels like you turned on the movie in the middle of it.
Right. It's a scene from later in the movie.
Yeah,
right?
It is. It does that thing that a lot of modern movies do where it starts with like a late scene and then it goes back in time. But it also is just like jarring how it does it. Like, you're just like, you start off, you're right there. It's like Halloween. Kids are like having, I think, maybe a birthday party on Halloween or something. Some sort of party is going on Halloween. all the kids are dressed up. This kid that's dressed as a ghost, who we find out is our main little psycho sociopath. He like lures this boy away, and you know, this boy and this girl away, who like were bullying him, and he dumps them into this pit. And you're like, okay. He tells them there's like a bag of jewels in the woods, and he wants to like, I'll show you where they're at. You can have them, and he just like pushes them into the pit.
The dumbest idea too, that like some like, because like this guy is older than and this kid, so it's like, why would you follow this weird kid dressed in a ghost outfit into the middle of the fucking woods? Why would he have a bag of jewels that he's gonna give you? None of it makes sense.
And as you find out later, it's not like he's not just a kid that is picked on, like he is, but like, I think this movie makes a pretty strong case for bullying, because sometimes I think kids are picked on for a reason, at least in this specific case. Like this 12-year-old boy is fucking terrifying, and so the kids are like really mean to him. But anyways, you get that opening like kill scene, and then like as it's happening, it like cuts to shots of his evil teddy bear, and then you get the title card, The Pit. Then we go back in time, and you see that this kid Jamie has like a crush on his teacher. I think it is Mrs. Livingston or Miss Livingston.
Yes.
Which will play into like one of my favorite scenes later. And you see like he's always like trying to get into like, he's trying to like make friends and get into like the cool kid clubs, and like he'll ask to be in the club and some kid will punch him. You get his parents talking to like this new babysitter that they want to have. I was a little confused at first whether she was a babysitter or like a psychologist, but she's a babysitter who is going to watch Jamie while his parents go out of town, I guess. I don't think they really explain.
Oh, they just disappear and like leave him with like this like 19-year-old.
Here's our kid. Fucking demon child. Yeah. Here's this like grad student. Here's our demon child. The dad does explain to her like that Jamie's fucked up. Like he says that, kind of exactly what he says is like that Jamie lives entirely in his own head on the periphery of reality, which this is where this movie exists.
Yeah.
And he tells her that Jamie was spotted in some old lady's yard, wearing only a Superman cape, so like completely naked except for a Superman cape, and he was swinging in the trees. There's a part where like they introduce the two like at the dinner table, and Jamie's sneaking up underneath the dinner table, like
looking under her dress,
yeah. And then so like, the parents take off, and and the movie like really starts to get going, where it's you know, like him and this babysitter hanging out a lot, and Jamie being really, really weird with this babysitter. Like, so he seems to like fall in love with every woman that he sees. Like he loved his teacher. He falls madly in love with this like babysitter right away. And you know, kind of relatable things to a kid that age, but like he is so inappropriate, fucking awful. Like, I'm sorry. I like when I think about the scenes, I start laughing. Like, very early on, he asks, "Hey, so do you have a boyfriend?" to like this babysitter, and he's like leering at her tits.
Yeah.
She's like fully dressed and covered up, but he's just like leering at her, like ogling this fucking babysitter. And he's like, "How old is your boyfriend?" It's just insane. He like goes and tells his teddy bear how hot the babysitter is, and like that's the point where I'm just like, okay, this is fucking wild. I'm like super into the, like, I think like your mileage will definitely vary. I don't think everyone will love this movie, but like I was just like, all right, I'm on board. This is fucking nuts. You know, he's like telling his teddy bear how hot he thinks this girl is, and the teddy bear is talking back to him, seemingly in his head. Like, there's this question of whether like the teddy bear is anything or not that I think gets answered at some point. He tells this babysitter his secret, which is that there's a pit in the woods with trolls in it. Of course, she doesn't believe him. There's a part where the babysitter goes into his room, and as she leaves, the teddy bear like turns its head and looks at the door where she like left. And at that point, I'm going, okay, so the teddy bear is a real supernatural thing. Like, I don't know. I think I said to you, Chris, like that this movie like kind of breaks the rules, and in my opinion, like, I think you get one supernatural element in your film, not just like as many things as you can think of.
We're just gonna like, we're gonna have crazy, we're gonna have psychopathic kid, we're gonna have crazy teddy bear, like maybe demonic teddy bear, and we're also gonna have like critters in a pit. Like, there's a lot going on here.
He figures out that the trolls like meat.
That's a funny scene too, where he's like talking to the babysitter. It's like, what do you think that he gives like some sort of animal eat? Just like, I don't fucking know. Chocolate bars. And then he buys chocolate bars and throws them into the pit.
Then he starts going to the butcher like every day and buying a shitload of meat. And there's a funny, the scene where he like, I think first starts buying the meat is pretty funny, because he's like, the butcher's like, well, what do you want? He's like, just give me a mix of stuff. Just give me a whole bunch of meat mixed together.
I just need some meat. Like, yeah. Well, like what? Like whatever I can buy with the money I gave you, asshole. It's like, well, like that's a lot of meat that you can buy for this. Well, it's feeding five. Like,
and the butcher does figure out at some point that, like, you know, it's like a small town that, like, you know, his parents are out of town. What are you doing with all this meat? And he, like, questions about it. He's like, well, we have a freezer. Okay.
It must be for the freezer. My mom wants it. Maybe we'll take care of it.
So we get a scene. There's a part where he, like, walks into the bathroom while his babysitter's taking a shower, and he like writes in, I think, lipstick, like he writes on the mirror, I love you. She freaks out. Understandably, she's like, don't come into the bathroom.
Well yeah, but that's after he like, she had just got in there, and he like sneaks into her room while she's sleeping, and her shirt's kind of open, and like her nipple is out. And it's like such a weird shot. And like, this film has a ton of weird shots, like lots of weird, like aggressive close ups. So like, there's this close up on like the whole, my whole fucking television screen was filled with this nipple.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's like a lingering shot.
Yeah. Like, she's lying on her back in bed with like her shirt open, and you know, her breasts are exposed, and we get a close up of her nipple.
and like, he's just kind of like sitting there like staring at her chest, like, I mean, and she wakes up. So like, that's like the first like really kind of like, okay, you're what a weird creeper.
Yeah.
And then he does the whole like sneaks into the bathroom and like,
yeah,
writes the note, also gets a peep at her, you know, between the shower curtain and the wall.
It's funny because like, both of these movies are like these evil kid movies, which you don't expect nudity from, but just because it was such a standard of the era, you get plenty of boobs.
It's like an aggressive amount.
Yeah. And then, which brings us to, I think, one of my favorite scenes in the movie, because it's absolutely fucking demented. He makes a recording like threatening his teacher. And he like leaves it playing at a payphone. He calls her. He starts the tape player, and it's basically telling his teacher, Miss Livingston, that he kidnapped her niece, and he will release her if she shows her tits through the window. But if she does not do this, like, she'll never see her niece again. And the teacher goes for it and flashes her tits to the kid through the window.
He's like taking Polaroids of it.
My exact note on this was amazing. Like, I was just like,
just amazing.
It's so out of bounds. Like, it's such a demented and perverted, like just putting this lady through this awful, traumatizing experience just so he could make her show her boobs through the window. Like, yeah,
and it's like up until then, like, all right, he's weird. Like, he's creepy. Like, he's doing stuff that like a weird, socially awkward.
He seems like he doesn't understand, right? Like,
A kid might do, like, a kid might sneak into like his live-in babysitter's room and just like, she's pretty, so I'm going to watch her sleep. Like, it's weird, but like, you're relatable at least. Like, you can understand it to a point. This is just straight up psycho. Like, yes, I'm going to become a serial rapist at some point.
So terrible. I know.
And it's also like, this is another thing. Like, I just have like major, like, you live in this weird small town, and this lady, like, this Miss Livingston, she's kind of familiar with Jamie, and
she knows it's him. She knows he's the one. Yeah.
Like, so why not just say, like, look, this motherfucker called, and like, I don't know how he did it, but like, he called and it was definitely fucking him, but she does, like, just like passes it off. Like, it's just a weird scene, man.
at some point, his babysitter notices that he's been stealing money to pay for the meat. He gets called out on it. And so he could no longer afford to buy meat for these trolls that he, for some reason, feels responsibility to keep feeding. And that's when he starts, like, really going and throwing people into the pit.
What's he's starting to, like, well, what else can I do?
Yes. I guess I have to kill people. Like, he's just so weird about everything that it's just like, well, that's what I gotta do now. And yeah. I'm not doing this for me. I'm doing it for them. And
this leads into the weirdest it's both the best and weirdest fucking thing in this movie.
You didn't talk about the montage where he kills a bunch of people?
Yeah, where it's like, just starts off with, it starts off with the little girl, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, yeah. And then it just keeps ramping up, and it's just, I don't know, it's played like almost slapsticky.
Like, it's in the music, like, like a joyful thing, a happy, like, it would be like the happy making friends montage or something in a movie. Like, it's really weird.
He kills like fucking three people.
It's just a kill montage. It's like he takes this old lady in her wheelchair to the pit. And my note is, the music is so inappropriate. LOL.
I love after like each kill, right? So like he has like a souvenir from each one, right? So like the little girl, like, he has her bike, and the old lady, he has her wheelchair.
Yeah.
And like the boyfriend, he ends up with the football. And like, it's always played like this, like, Looney Tunes type music as he's coming out of the forest. Like, he's in the fucking wheelchair, like, wee.
Yeah, like the music is so funny, especially in this part. It has nothing to do with what's going on screen. It's so happy-go-lucky. Like, we're seeing a happy montage of him killing people. we come back to the scene from the beginning of the movie. You get the Halloween scene with the bully. So many of his victims in this part, like, just run into the pit accidentally without seeing it. I don't know how.
So good.
How you would do that. It's not like he covers the pit up or anything. It's a giant gaping hole. It's
there, yeah.
That they run into. Probably my favorite outside of the wheelchair is his babysitter's boyfriend. He like pretends he wants to play football with him, and the boyfriend is like out in this field playing, like, tossing the ball around anyways, but he's like, no, we have to go into the woods on some fucking narrow trail to throw the ball back and forth. Like it makes no sense.
Like he's then like the boyfriend's the only one that's like, yo, this don't make sense. Like yeah, you can't really play here.
Says it doesn't make sense. Yeah. But he gets him to go long and
he runs into the hole.
I think that's a shot that's in the trailer too. So if you're listening here and you've not seen the movie, like watch the trailer. This trailer is, I think, going to let you know whether you want to see this movie or not. Like the trailer really sold me on it.
The trailer has the definitely has the wheelchair one.
Like. Yes, yes, yeah. There's like we got a weird comedy bit too with the like the wheelchair where like a cop is fucking around in it or something.
Yeah, cause the cop is just angry because now people are like starting to go missing and he has to do work.
He's
like fucking angry and he starts flipping out.
He finally lures his babysitter to the pit. He finally like because he's been telling her the whole movie that this thing exists. They go. It's pretty awesome. Like her reaction is like, "This is a huge discovery for science. We have to tell everybody about this." And he's like, "No, absolutely not." And she falls into the pit. She like falls and she's like hanging. I think he just lets her fall in, right?
He's trying to like help her, but she falls. He can't reach her.
Okay, he's actually trying to get her out.
Yeah, like because he's distraught about it. Actually, and he likes seeing her ghost. Her,
remember? Yeah,
yeah. Like starts seeing her image and stuff, and like he feels bad that he let her die, but also that the trolls, the trollogs or whatever the fuck he called them, like that they're gonna starve now because he doesn't know anybody else to kill.
Yeah, so after his babysitter who he was in love with is eaten by the trolls, and this I think when she gets killed is the first time we get any sort of gore, like seeing them eat her. Like we do get to see a little bit of it. Which is kinda like for a while, I'm like, oh, this movie's not gonna have any gore at all. Like, seemingly, like it's just the disturbingness is like the kid. But no, they saved it for her. They do show them like trying, like you know, taking a bite out of her arm or something. Like nothing. Like if you're a gore hound, you're not gonna be impressed. But like they do finally show. But as you were saying, at this point, he's like run out of all the people that he hates, the people that he feels deserves to get thrown into this pit.
Yeah. Or that he at least like feels that he can lure there.
Yeah. So he comes up with a solution which I was not expecting and I really kind of love. He's just like, all right, well now I'm gonna let the trolls out of the pit. And he fucking like ties a rope and throws a rope down to them. The trolls get out and they start causing havoc in the town. They start like just dragging people back into the hole and eating them. You do get some more gore with these trolls eating the people. At right around this point is when my girlfriend is like, "Those things look like Ewoks that got fed after midnight," which she's like mixing two movies there. But I did laugh my ass off at her saying that. So well, kinda.
You don't really get a good look at the trolls when they're in the pit. Yeah. Like, they're kind of glowy eyes and like
yellow glow. They almost look like Jawas in the pit.
Yeah, like, there's like a shape to them, but you can't see a whole lot. And then when they come out, like she's spot on, like that they look like fucking Ewoks
that have gone rabid or something.
Yeah, like there's like scenes of them like running through the forest, trying to get back to the pit for this like climactic scene. At the pit. And like they're really all running and it's like they're running through fucking Endor.
Like you do get shots of these things just running around fucking around after he lets them out.
Like did they rob the Return of the Jedi scene? Like the like oh Lucas is making another Star Wars movie. Let's like rob his prop trailer. That movie comes out 2 years from now, but like
you know, fucking get their fur all fucked up and
yeah.
That kind of leads to the end, though, because then the cops get, you know, they lead like a mob.
They find a body in a cornfield.
Yes.
And then there's like down by this quarry, this couple gets killed. Another like unnecessary. Not that I was complaining, but like chick takes her top off for no apparent reason. Also, what the fuck was up with that guy? Like, she goes, like, oh, are you sure no one's going to come down here? He's like, yeah, I'm sure. Like, the house up the road's abandoned. And she's like, well, how about you come skinny dip? He's like, no, nah, I'm tired. I'm going to lay down. Like, what the fuck, dude? She's basically saying, come out here and fuck me. And you're like, no, I'm going to go listen to some, like, rock over here.
Yeah, I remember my girlfriend laughing at that part, too. Like, what guy ever does that? I'm like, I don't know.
But yeah, she takes her top off and gets attacked by the oversized Ewoks. And yeah, and then the big scene where all the men in the town, like, get their guns out. And
yep. And then, you know, the cops lead this mob into the woods, and they fucking no problem kill all these fucking trolls. The trolls are, like, all down in this pit, and they just fucking blow them away. And you get to see, like, them fucking killing the fuck out of these trolls, just, like, the trolls lying on their back in this pit. Just getting fucking loaded with bullets. Yeah. You see tons of fucking bullets hitting these things. But then, like, you see, like, Jamie in the background at some point, like, watching all this. And then it cuts to this ending. I don't know what the fuck. It's like later he goes to, like, basically stay with his grandparents for a little bit. I think he's just going to visit his grandparents, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Like,
I don't know if he's going to live there or just go visit. Like, his parents would drop him off at his grandparents.
He's definitely going there for a while. So
yeah, he gets there and is like, they say it's a step cousin. Like, this little girl is there.
She's like, I guess his grandfather's like, oh, like, see that little girl over there, like Alicia. She could be your playmate.
Yeah, so, like, he could be your playmate.
He goes and talks with her. And she's like, I guess, like, we're step cousins or something.
And she lures him into the woods by his grandparents' house, and she pushes him into a pit.
It's the fucking funniest thing.
It's like, you get, like, she pushes him, and you get a freeze frame, and that's the end. Like, freeze frame is her pushing him into the pit, and, you know, he got some of his own medicine. But it's just like, you know.
I just cackled.
There's another pit. His step cousin lives by it. She found it too. Like, first off, the whole premise of the whole movie, like, is nonsense. Like, he has a pit in his backyard, and these trolls are there. There's an evil teddy bear. Like, it's all nonsense. And then double down and go, yeah, but then there's another pit, and his step cousin's gonna push him into it, and so he's gonna get what he deserves. And that's just the end. Like you said, like, it's kind of a punchline at the end. Like, it's just like, it's a stupid joke.
So dumb.
Stupid punchline. And
he, like, walks up to the pit and is like, oh my god, no way. I had a pit just like this. They're troll logs. And she's like, I know.
That's the end of the Canadian classic filmed in Wisconsin. Evil Kid film from 1981. Chris, final thoughts and rating.
All right, one thing before we get on to the final thoughts here, but I'm just reading this here, is that the guy who wrote it, when he wrote it, it was supposed to be, one, Jamie was supposed to be younger, and the trolls were supposed to be, like, they were supposed to be fake. Like, they weren't supposed to be there. Yeah. So, like, he's just a crazy kid luring people and pushing them into this fucking pit. And the director changed all that, made him older, made the monsters real, and added, like, all this goofiness to it. So, like, to the point where the original writer's, like, not happy.
He was upset with the final film.
That's crazy. But look, I laughed a lot during this movie. It is all over the fucking place, though. Like, all over. Like, as you said, like, there's way too much going on just horror thematically. Like, you know, evil kid, the demonic teddy bear that's really not used to, like,
no,
for any
but,
purpose.
But suggested it is real. Like,
yes, it's suggested alive, it's real
and evil.
Just, and, like, the monsters in the pit. Like, But then there's like these weird subtexts too. Like, so there's this weird, really creepy scene where Jamie he convinces Sandy, is that her name? The babysitter convinces her to like wash his back.
Oh God. I can't believe I skipped over that.
And she's like he's in there and he's like talking and he says like, you know, he says something about like his mom likes to do something, like really enjoys washing me.
Yeah.
Like, so there's like this implied like sexual abuse angle.
Also, that scene is like transactional. Like, she knows that he wants her to do it for like she knows he's getting off on him doing it, but she's just doing it to fucking placate this little psychopath. Like,
yeah,
it's a very, again, like some of the stuff in this movie, most everything in this movie would never be made today. This movie's not getting a remake.
No. Like, there's like another piece. Like, it's just like, it's, as I said, all over the place. Like, so after Sandy falls in, like, then, like, finally, like, hey, the police have to get involved. Like, I don't know how they haven't been involved in the beginning and how Jamie isn't prime suspect number one for the fact that like the little girl Angie disappeared and he's been haunting that fucking woman, Miss Livingston. But anyway, the police get involved and like, oh, like what are the details? And they arrest somebody. Like, they arrest this guy. He's planted all the fucking evidence on this other dude.
That's right. I totally forgot about that angle.
Like, there's he's all
truly
this,
a psychopath.
Right. There's all this weird shit that just like tangentially just like lines off and it just doesn't flow properly for me. Like the whole weird like slapsticky kill montage to the Looney Tunes music, like where it's played like he's in the fucking you know, the Three Stooges almost. I don't know, like this film is individually like there are scenes of it that I'm like, this is batshit. I think the entire concept of it is batshit. As a film, like, I just can't, man. I just can't with this thing. Like, it is, it's, this is maybe something I would watch with other people just to see their fucking, like,
yeah,
their reaction to it. But I can't ever see watching this one again.
All right, rating.
I am gonna go with a 5.
Okay. I disagree with you on this one. I think that this movie, look, can I sit here and argue it's a good movie? No, I cannot. I think that this movie, like, stacking up against the other movie we talked about tonight, like, Bloody Birthday is a pretty standard and fairly entertaining kind of slasher type movie from that genre or from that era, with like a little twist in that, a group of little kids doing it. This thing is unlike any fucking thing you've ever seen in your fucking life. Like, it's just, what on earth am I fucking watching movie? I think for some people, like, it sounds like for you, like, it doesn't work because of that. Like, it's just so out there with its different angles. But to me, I'm just like, when something is showing me something new and kind of nuts, I'm like, okay. And it's the type of movie, when I was thinking about it after, I'm like, it's the type of movie, like, all right, you're at a party a couple years from now, and in real life, I don't mean a ton of horror fans, but there's always, like, that one other guy at the party who's, oh, he's, you know, you meet this other guy, he's the horror fan. This is a movie I'm going to go, have you ever seen The Pit? Like, it's the one I'm going to fucking, like, bring up, not saying it's a good movie, but saying, like, have you seen this? Like, have you seen this fucking artifact that's so fucking out there? And I think for that, like, it pushes it above for me. Like,
fair enough.
And, like, I don't, you know, like, the sexual politics or whatever you want to call it, like, some of it is so probably edgy at the time, but for now, like, we've become kind of puritanical about sex in films. Like the stuff that's in this, I don't see like a movie. You might have another Evil Kid movie. You might have another Evil Kid movie with a teddy bear and a pit in the woods, but it will not be this fucking like perverted and depraved. Like that part doesn't bother me. It's like that to me. That's like a plus for this movie. I mean, it's like that's crazy, dude, that you guys are doing this. So for me, like again, not saying it's a good movie, but it's one of those fucking movies that like you watch. Catch at midnight or something after some beers, and when you wake up in the morning, you're like, did I dream that I just watched that? Because that's fucked up, dude. And so I'm giving it a 7 out of 10. Like, I kind of treasure this movie. Slightly higher rating than Bloody Birthday. Like, it sounds like you and I have a split here where you're saying Bloody Birthday, right, is the better
one. Yes, I prefer Bloody Birthday over The Pit.
I strongly like the Pit as the better movie, which leads us to our online poll and our most interesting end yet of any episode, because I compiled the results from our online polls, and we have, for Bloody Birthday, we have 5 votes. And for The Pit, we have 5 votes.
Oh, no.
We've come to a draw. Our episode is a draw, and I'm going to say put this on as a double feature then.
Yep. You got to watch them both. They are both the winner tonight. Something. Like, they should be experienced at least once.
I honestly, like, I had never seen these movies, and I knew actually nothing about either one of them going into it. I just think I got lucky with a weird, I mean, neither of these are like amazing, but they're like, as a horror fan, you feel like you've seen everything and never heard of these before, discovered them, and I was happy to do so. So I hope you had a little bit of fun with them, Chris.
Yeah, they were definitely enjoyable.
What do you have lined up for us for episode 15?
So for episode 15, we're staying in the 80s, moving up a little bit in time frame, and we are going with some sci-fi horror. There's the double link here is that they are both directed by Tobe Hooper. 1985's Life Force.
Awesome.
And 1986's Invaders from Mars.
Okay. Have you seen these?
I have not seen either of these. I've Life Force has been on my list forever. I just have never gotten around to it.
Okay.
And I did not know about Invaders from Mars until tonight.
Okay.
When I was trying to find something to match with Life Force. But we're going to watch both of these. They are available on Tubi. I think that's it. Like, I mean, you can rent them, but for free. Tubi is the place to go.
So your theme is like sci-fi, Tobe Hooper sci-fi.
Tobe Hooper sci-fi, yes. Okay.
I have seen Invaders from Mars. I saw it when I was a really little kid. I don't remember any of it. I don't remember liking it. I remember disliking it.
Invaders from Mars on IMDb is pulling a 5.6.
Yeah, there's people that will go to town for Invaders from Mars, but just, again, I'm talking from my memory of seeing it at, like, 8 years old. I remember not liking it, but, like, it could have been one of those weird things. Like, I was a weird kid where I was like, I guess I'm still that weird kid where I'm like, it's not violent enough, you know, like, I got so mad, like.
Essentially coming from, you know, the director of, you know, Texas
Chainsaw. Yeah, yeah.
And that also came out the same year as Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, which Hooper also directed, so.
Invaders from Mars did?
Yeah, 86. Okay. He released both that and Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2.
As for Life Force, as I think you said, like, it's one that you've had on your list for a long time. Same, dude. Haven't seen it yet. I've been meaning to get to it forever. It's actually, I have a list of movies that I brainstorm from to like try to come up with episodes. Life Force was on my list. I couldn't figure out what to pair it with. So I'm excited to see that one. I'm interested to see where I land on Invaders from Mars, because I have no memory of it other than thinking that, like, I, here's my memory, is it was like, going for like the Spielberg type angle, but didn't pull any of it off. Unlike Poltergeist from Hooper, which really does, like, it really feels like a Spielberg horror.
Right.
I remember thinking Invaders from Mars. Again, you're talking about someone who I can't tell you a single frame of the movie, so it's been that long.
Yeah, but, maybe it comes to something different this time around.
Well, and I might, you know, yeah, I have hopefully somewhat different sensibilities. Like, like I can appreciate stuff I can appreciate horror that's aimed towards kids now more than I could when I was a kid, because I was like, I'm a badass adult, man. I like scary horror shit, you know, like that's how I was as a little kid.
And it should be noted, like, the, you know, two very different approaches here, right? Like,
these are different, almost different genres in horror.
Yeah, like as you said, like Invaders from Mars is more of like a kids horror film. You know, it's PG, so you're not going to get like a lot of gore there. You're not going to get like it's more of a classic kind of 1950s era sci-fi, as opposed to like Life Force, which from what I understand is like basically space vampires. So
I know nothing about Life Force. I see people bring it up as this Hooper movie that gets ignored. Like, I've been meaning to get to it because I like Hooper a lot. So that'll be fun.
Yep.
So come back next month. In the meantime, enjoy the Evil Kids.